I would like to thank you very much for making time to chat with me this afternoon.
You're very welcome.
Okay, well, let's dive right in here. I want to go back to the beginning, really, and I want to find out, did you grow up in a musical home?
Yes, indeed. I have three sisters, and the four of us, we learned two instruments each. So it was like a little orchestra, you could say.
Wow. Which instruments did you and your sisters learn?
I learned the violin and the recorder. Actually, I started with the recorder. The violin was when I was like 10 years old. So we had a cello, a transverse flute, guitar, actually one more violin. And my youngest sister, she's 16 years younger than I am, she was the only one who actually got to learn the piano. So we have all kinds of instruments in our family.
My goodness. Did your parents also perform musically?
My father, he's still a member of a church choir, and actually he was he had piano lessons when he was young. It seemed to be that those piano lessons were so awful that he couldn't stand the sound of the instruments anymore. That's why only my youngest sister got to learn the piano. So he is now a singer, but he started off being a pianist. And my mother, she still plays violin in a chamber orchestra.
So now, about how old were you when you and your siblings began to play the various instruments?
I was roughly 5 years old when I started playing the recorder. Back then, you would have like those group lessons, and I don't think in backside that the lessons were like outstanding, but I always kept playing, and it was just for in our family sort of normal to play an instrument. However, I have to say, when I was around 11 years old, I was so fed up with going to record lessons that actually turned out to be pretty boring at that point, unfortunately. So I had huge fights with my parents if I wanted to stop. They, of course, wanted that I went on playing. But at some point, they gave in. So they said, okay, now you can't stop. And it's only at that point that I finally decided to go on. And actually what had happened before, it's a quite funny story. I like to tell you that when I went home from one of those lessons, at some point I took out my recorder from my bag and threw it right in the shrubs next to where I walked home. And it was almost a mile away from where I was living. It happened that a friend of mine, he took the same way like half an hour later, and he saw that recorder somewhere, and since I was the only person he knew of that would play the recorder, he took it and rang the bell at our door and saying, hey, look what I found, and actually it was my recorder. So it's, you see, sort of destiny forced me to go on.
Oh my good. Well, I hope that you've dedicated at least one of your recordings to that friend who rescued your recorder.
That's a very good idea. I haven't done it yet, but who knows?
So this is actually very interesting. Your parents really encouraged you pretty emphatically to continue music. Do you think that they were really eager for you to become a professional musician, or were they simply wanting you to continue with the musical instruction?
My parents, they had a business. They sold clothes in that little town in the south of Germany where I grew up, and I was the only boy. So in a certain way, the prospect of going into that business would have been quite normal. Also, like, my parents expect me to go into that business, which was absolutely an option that was held open for me. And at some point, it just turned out that this wouldn't be actually my life. So they would support me whatever direction I took. So the music lessons were not meant to educate us as a professional musician. And I turned out to be the only professional musician in the family. It was just part of, they thought music is very important for the soul, which, I mean, it's true. I can just confirm it from my experience as a musician. Mm. That, of course, it's fantastic to have such a passion in life.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that your wife is also your musical partner, so that sort of ties into that, too. Is that how you met?
Yeah, they came with the ensemble she played with at the time, at some point to Germany, to took a master class with me. That's why when we met each other for the first time, and it turned out that a couple of months later I had my first Montreal appearance. So it's sort of we ran into each other a second time in like four or five months. So at least we had sort of the chance to meet each other. However, we at that point we were separated by a big ocean.
You know, I know often people will say that it's very difficult or very a very specific experience to work with one's spouse or partner. And it must have special complications when you're in a creative field like music. And I'm just sort of wondering what that's like. It must be very difficult to separate your personal and your professional lives.
It's impossible. And there's something to say. The older I grow, the more I appreciate to be involved with music. The reason is that both of us, we really like what we are doing. So we don't feel so much the need to separate our professional life from our past time, because it's just what we like doing anyway. But also I have to say that often people think that professional musicians, it's what they are doing in their regular life would be just making music. The thing is that maybe 70-80% of our time we spend actually organizing or preparing stuff, and it's not really that we are playing music all the time. Mm-hmm. And Sophie, I mean, first of all, she's a fantastic musician. She is also a fantastic manager of the groups. I mean, she actually... in a certain way, she directs the business. Mm-hmm. And this is, we have found a way that we could handle our group as, it's our company in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually much easier to do it together than to run it on your own.
Mm-hmm. You actually raised a really good point. I think many people, particularly non-musicians, don't realize how much goes into the behind the scenes and the planning. I think, you know, as much as many people appreciate music, they come to a concert and they see these formally dressed musicians come out and they play wonderful music and there's applause and maybe a reception afterwards. But there's really, that's really the tip of the iceberg. So what's, you know, what is a typical day or week or month like for you in preparing not only the planning and the organizing, but there's a lot of research and real scholarly work that you have done to be able to play the music you play.
That's very right. I realized at some point that being a musician means that you have at least like 10 different professions. For instance, I love composing. So I compose a lot of very different pieces. So that is also very time-consuming. It's so time-consuming that usually I could only do it when I'm actually on tour, because at home it's impossible. We have now a son. He's actually today 9 months old. So there wouldn't be any composing right now at home. But that's one important issue in my life. Then there's arranging as a recorder player. Very often you have to arrange music for your instrument. Then you have to... I'm leading a group in Manhattan, the Manhattan Record Orchestra. That music has to be prepared. Then, you have to find the repertoire for different programs. We have an own concert series in Montreal where we... have three different programs of like very highly irregular programs in that sense that, for instance, once we had a concert with a jazz pianist, we had a concert with singers that sang contemporary pieces I composed for that program, we had orchestral concerts. It's very different, but all the programs are highly individual, so that means we have to prepare a specific program just for that one event, and that can be quite time consuming. Then all the hours you spend on a phone and you write emails, it just never ends.
Mm-hmm. And you've been conducting as well.
It's one of my hidden passions that are now are more and more getting public, into the public. And so Caprice has had its first, my ensemble Caprice, its first appearance as an orchestra. And so I conducted. I conduct the Manhattan Record Orchestra, and I started off conducting a choir when I was young, so I always had that experience. But now it's sort of more getting into a really professional way. And next year we'll have a big concert with choir and orchestra. And actually, I've recorded the Royal Fireworks by Handel with a brass band in the original version last year for Atma, that CD label here in Montreal.
Now, I'm curious here. I'm going to go off a little bit on a tangent because I do know that you compose and, of course, you're a performer. And I'm sort of curious to know where those two things overlap, where they intersect. Do you, in your composing, is that down a different road for you? Are you exploring a different kind of music, or does it in any way overlap with the kind of early music that you play as a recorder player?
This is a very interesting question. I mean, as a recorder player, you always try to cover all styles. The instrument is so versatile, so you do medieval music, Renaissance, Baroque, contemporary music, jazz, everything is sort of in the range of the instrument. Now, as a composer, I started off a writing piece for myself because I thought, well, there's a couple of techniques on the instrument that I'd like to use and that I have not seen so much in other contemporary pieces. So I just tried to find music where I could use specific techniques that I used as a player. So that was like the first link. Then, of course, I'm always looking for new pieces for my own repertoire, and it turns out that you don't have a piece for a specific instrumentation, like we recorded a piece with a recorder, terrestrial, two violins, a basso continuo, a concerto that I wrote, because there's no single piece in the 18th century that has been composed in exactly that instrumentation. So sometimes you see the need, because at the time they forgot to write something, where sort of as an early music performer, the composer sort of chimes in. But I've also, composed contemporary pieces with electronically amplified, and also in jazz style, and all kinds of atonal styles. For me, the interest in composing was more or less to learn the handcraft, the craftsmanship of composing, of music making. Mm-hmm. And so it turned out to inspire my way of performing as well, because in the process of composing, you of course learn a lot. So when I, for instance, compose in the style of early music, I look into how the big famous colleagues at the time, the great colleagues, composed. And this is sort of an apprenticeship that I went through that I'm really glad of now.
I have heard that you said rhythm fascinates you, and I would like to know what you meant by that.
It's a very fascinating phenomenon. Music has, like, we could split it up in three different categories. So there's harmony, there's melody, and there's rhythm. And it turns out that physiologically speaking, both melody and harmony are quite intellectual processes that need to be analyzed with your brain power. And only by going through that analyze, how quick it might be, only with that we can actually understand the meaning of it. As opposed to this, rhythm is something that goes straight away into your nervous system. So your body has sort of very straightforward reactions that are quite different from listening to just music, to just melody and harmony. I mean, a very crude example would be if you compare a discotheque with the presentation of The Art of the Fugue by Bach. The difference is the two audiences behave in a very different way. The audience in pop music, heavy metal, whatever, they would dance and move, whereas opposed to classical audiences that sit very still because they have to make sure they can follow the stream of music. So you have something, in a certain way, it goes back to the origins of music, and it always feels very... when we with Caprice, we often perform with percussionists. You can clearly see the difference in the reaction of people when they listen to music when there's a rhythmical drive going on at the same time.
I'm curious then, who are some of the musicians, or what is some of the music that you like to listen to just for fun?
Actually, I like to listen to all different kinds of music. Often now it's also popular music because my my little boy, he turns out to like it. And I listen to, very often I go through musical history and I listen to all kinds of music from different periods. And I also like to listen to jazz, pop. So you see, it's, I have not a very a very elaborate taste when it comes to listening to music.
Well, I, if you're willing to talk about it, I wanted to ask you about your son. It's Gabriel.
Yeah.
Of course, now he's got two parents who are such accomplished musicians, and he's 9 months old, and you know, surely he's got to have a very musical upbringing. How are you introducing music into his life?
He was introduced to music before he was born, and we had that very surprising experience when he came back from everybody came back from hospital after his birth, and he would scream on the top of his lungs, and we didn't know what to do, that he would instantly calm down when we played a recording of a concert he had actually taken part, but still in the womb of his mother. So he recognized the music because Sophie also practiced that the pieces by John Cage, actually, contemporary composer. And just the feeling of realizing that there's something he already knew would calm him down right away. This was quite miraculous for us as being musicians. And then we also realized that singing songs for him would be very important. He would react a lot. So now music is sort of, it's part of his daily life in certain ways. It was so funny last week. So I had a couple of students come over to my place and we had a concert. And I told them that now they would, first of all, they would listen to Gabriel playing his first piece in his life, because just the day before, whenever you gave him a recorder, he would like try to blow a little bit in the instrument. You would go get those very tiny, shy sounds. And actually, he performed a little piece for them, which was, it was just very funny to see. But I was surprised, actually, how strongly a young kid in his age would already react when listening to music. So this is very encouraging, because it's fun to see a little kid fascinated by something.
Do you how do you feel about the idea if he were to grow up to be a musician, a professional musician?
Whatever it takes for him to be happy. I mean, I would like him to find something that is really a passion for him that he really likes to do. And whatever it is, if he prefers sports, that's perfectly fine with me. But of course, if he likes music, I have nothing against.
Okay, so let's see. Performer, you're a composer, a professor, a conductor, a dad, husband. What else do you see yourself doing in music or in life?
What I don't have the time now. What I would really love is to travel. Since I moved to Canada, I have not been a lot to France or Italy, and just to see those fantastic places, old churches, vineyards, and it's something that I start missing here after 8 years. I'm living now in Montreal. Mm-hmm. This is something I really would like to do, but on a professional level, I mean, I'm a happy person, so I will just keep going.
One thing I would love for you to talk about is your instruments. You play a number of different instruments, different types of recorders, and then some sort of related, like the traverso and the flute pastorelle, which I find very fascinating. And I wonder if you'd sort of give an overview of the various instruments that you play and, you know, what defines them and how they're similar and different from one another.
The recorder is a very versatile instrument, as being, my solo program, for instance, I would be like 20 different instruments actually on stage. So it's quite different from giving a violin recital or piano recital where it's just always the same instrument. And this is something that comes with the instrument. If you play medieval repertoire, Renaissance repertoire, Baroque repertoire, you need three different types of instruments already. And since the recorder comes in families, you get them in all different kinds of pitches. So you start off with like having a huge collection, because it's the only way how you can deal professionally with your repertoire. And the other matter that complicates the things a little bit is that you have different pitches, like some music would be performed in 4/8, 4/15, half a step lower than our piano tuning, or in 8/4/40 or 8/4/65. So you need instruments on all different steps of a scale and for all different periods and on all different pitches. That makes a huge collection of very different instruments, which is fantastic as a musician, because actually there's a lot of variety. When you practice one day or the other day, sometimes you feel like you do something completely different since it sounds so differently. And then, of course, a traverso, it's quite common for early musicians to play a couple of different instruments, and it has been common in the 18th century as well. But still, we are talking about completely different pair of shoes. It's a different world, the traverso, and even though the fingering in certain ways resembles the recorder, the embouchure, the way of producing the sound, is so different that, I mean, it takes a lot of practicing to get everything straight and on a high level.
And what about flute pastorelle?
The flute pastorelle is a fascinating instrument from the 18th century. Telemann, when he was in Sorow in Poland, he must have run into folk musicians. He actually refers to in one of his three autobiographies. And he was quite intrigued by the high standard of their music making. This is how he probably ran into a folk type of recorder that is quite small and has a different range from a standard Baroque recorder. The range of it would be actually smaller. It's not like a little over 2 octaves, but just 1/6 octave. This stems from the Renaissance type of bore, and this must have been the element that intrigued Telemann, and so he composed that suite in E-flat major for flute pastorelle that is actually tuned in a different way than the violins are. So the violins would be tuned in 8/4/15, whereas the sixth flute, the flute pastorelle, the tiny little flute, would be in 8/4/40. And this is because at the court, in the 18th century, the professional musicians, they had a different pitch than those itinerary musicians would use. And I can just assume that Telemann, I mean, he was just a very witty and spirited man, that he tried to find a way how he could combine that kind of folk music with, or at least folk music instrument with the noble chord music. And the only way how you can handle this is to let the orchestra play in E-flat major, whereas the recorder plays in D major, half step lower. But since the instrument is half step higher, it will sound on the same pitch. So this is a very specific way of dealing with it. Actually, later, Paganini, he would do the same. He would tune the orchestra in a different pitch than he did, so he would come out even more brilliantly. So composers use that kind of technique. I think that Telemann, in this respect, was maybe the first one, at least for the recorder, that used it.
Well, I'm wondering if you have a... You know, you speak so passionately about Telemann. I'm wondering if you have a favorite composer to play, or maybe you have a favorite non-biggie. In other words, everyone knows of Bach and Vivaldi and Handel and Telemann, but you have any other, you know, favorites, maybe some up-and-coming name that we're all going to learn more about that you feel passionately about?
There's one particular recorder piece that intrigues me since years, and it is the only composition that is extant from that composer, who we only know as Signor Detri. We don't even know his or his circumstances, but actually his first name is Louis, as they found out in the meantime. And there's the only piece that we know of is that fantastic recorder sonata in C minor that is like on the top of the best sonatas of all the composers confounded in the 18th century. And it's quite intriguing that he wrote this piece for the players at the Stuttgart court that have been evaluated at that time by the Kapellmeister Pelz. And there have been 4 recorder players, 3 of whom must have been excellent according to his evaluation. So we know of that extremely high standard at the time. Now, Detri, he wrote a piece for these players, and I would so much like to discover hundreds of sonatas that he has written for the recorder. Actually, they all seem to have been lost. So, In the meantime, we've recorded a piece. It's on that Les Setso CD, and I play it quite often in concerts.
Well, Matthias Matte, I want to thank you very much for making time to speak with me this afternoon.
Well, it's been my pleasure.